core of the interview with Carl Bone, your opinions of LMS as a faculty member. I mean, was there any sense of rivalry or anything like that?
Not particularly. I think I had more personal reactions at the social level in the university club, where very often in a larger group, some of the diehards in the LNS college sort of didn't consider the rest of us as legitimate members of the faculty. Old idea of the classics coming first, and then literature, and then other things.
Do you mean to say that this was in discussion, or that they would?
These were
they
just
would
personal asides,
you?
In just as one even, detects prejudice.
Yes,
if he is
course,
the target.
Yeah. Oh yes.
These things were never said in so many words directly, but there were people. Let me start over again. I was glad that my career was spent under superiors other than the ones who were in letters and science.
You mean now, there were, and Albion and...
Yeah, that's right, and, that's right. Mm. Now, and of course, during the Fred years, there was a real resentment on parts of the campus toward, there was a feeling that LNS was not properly represented in the administration.
Yes.
And Fred, of course, I suppose, was amiss on this because he immediately appointed Baldwin and then Bill Sarles.
Yeah.
He was more comfortable working with people that he knew very well, but you see, LVM did just the opposite. He appointed Fred Harrington,
mm-hmm.
and got people from the rest of the campus in the inner management, let's say higher man echelon, if that's what you want to call it.
There was a...
But I sometimes have... listen to some individuals from the College of Letters and Science just expounding on anything, and I just thanked my lucky stars that I wasn't answerable to them as a superior officer, because people who knew their own subjects very well, but on the world at large, came to conclusions that just weren't part of the real.
People.
These were the particular individuals, yes.
Mm.
But I think it's fair to say that, particularly toward the end of the Fred era, that there was resentment that Letters and Science was not properly represented.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Also, of course, the Steenbach patent or the arrangement with Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation was criticized very severely.
Yes.
And the irony of this is that when Steenbach turned over his patent, that the funds from this was to be used in the natural sciences. People in biochemistry and in agriculture thought he was being overly liberal, because here were all these other science departments that were better equipped than the department in which the key experiments had been done.
Oh.
So Steenbach broadened, made the patent money available to any science at all.
Yes.
And the rest of the campus, in time, resented. Said that, I heard in faculty meeting, for example, somebody maintaining that this should never have been allowed, this should have been available to any part of the university.
Mm.
What originally looked super generous to one group, later on came to be criticized as too restrictive. What Elvium did, and I think Fred also as graduate dean before he became president, with WARF money available for the natural sciences, what university research money was available, which wasn't so very much, was not given to natural sciences. Yeah. That went to the rest of the university. And this was even more true in the Elvium era.
What did you think about the push to get WARF money for social sciences?
Well, just personally, after all, I grew up as a man, have the prejudices of a natural scientist. I don't like to see the word science used as an entry. It ought to be the nature of the work that's going on. Social science, of course, has been supported for quite a long time.
Yes.
I think to the hardcore scientist, much of their work isn't really very scientific because it's hard to reproduce and hard to know when they've achieved a result. There's, of course, snobbishness the other way. The biological research man, particularly my generation and particularly the older ones, were often critical of medical people who came to conclusions and were very confident of their conclusions on a basis which no scientist would accept. But the other side of the coin is that the medical man had to make a decision on the basis of incomplete information. Yeah. And the research scientist had the privilege of deferring his judgment until he did more work, whereas the medical men had to act then. So a lot of that criticism was unfair. And it's certainly true that the sorts of problems that social scientists address themselves to need to be looked at.
You do think they do have something
they need to be looked at. Whether what they're doing is really producing anything, I can't say. Incidentally, I in later years down at the University Club used to come in contact with Walter Morton very frequently. And he, of course, was always very critical of the social scientists, and his own daughter became a natural scientist. And he said, well, the social scientists are building models, and maybe those models have some connection with reality, and maybe they don't. Mm. That was his argument. And because he himself was successful as a consultant to corporations and in the stock market, why, he could say, well, they may talk well, but what can they do?
Yeah.
So I've been exposed to that kind of, but I can't see if I had to swear on a stack of Bibles what I think of the social scientists, I really can't answer.
You prefer not to.
Well, yeah, not that I'm hiding anything, but I think they have to make conclusions on the basis of, well, to the best of their ability. Whether their conclusions become gospel truth, whether one can't be a social scientist unless he votes in a certain way, when that sort of thing creeps in, then I would say that the word science shouldn't be applied. But, that's another thing I might say about the biochemistry department. In all the years I was with it, when potential staff members were discussed, the politics of the man never entered into it. I never knew how most of my associates voted.
You're saying you feel that the social scientists tend to be...
That this is more an element in their mode of operation.
Well, you remember...
Now, maybe there's some individuals, maybe I've just seen some of these individuals, but in biochemistry, certainly, Link was far left and Steinbach was far right. Yeah. LVM, I couldn't say.
Yeah.
I'm sure he had opinions.
Were you a member of a dining club?
Not a university dining club. For a while, I was a member of something called the American Business Club, which was a group of city people and faculties, the faculty people. But the faculty wasn't very well represented. They were mainly in physics and mathematics.
When was this?
This was recently. That group has rather died out. It was
since your retirement.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and a little before.
Mm-hmm.
The university club, of course. I lunched there for years, and so my personal contacts go beyond the department, and I rather welcomed that. Way back when Noble Clark started an assistant professor's club because he thought the departments were getting too big, that the younger members ought to have more contact with their own counterparts. And that became known as our group.
Mm-hmm.
That continued for a while. One of the members was quite a number of them became administrators and so on.
Were you aware of dining clubs?
Oh yes.
Many people must not have belonged to them. Was there a sense of being excluded if one wasn't in them? Or?
If there was, I wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly never, I don't ever recall hearing anybody make any kind of a remark about people in dining clubs.
Were you on many committees? You said you were in the two divisional committees.
Yes,
were you on other university committees?
No.
Just those?
Yes, the committees I was once on a committee. I've been on ad hoc committees at the graduate school, but no, I was not involved in the...
Now, why would that be?
I think, LVM was so obviously a representative I don't know how many others, let's say my contemporaries in the department, that they were very active on committees. Yes, Frank Strong and Marvin Johnson, I really don't know.
So Ted DeLuca, I think, has
of course, but he's younger and he's in the sense... an LVM, very different temperamentally, but has a very large research group and is very active in the rest of the country as well.
People like A.W. Peterson, Glenn Pound, Celery, Russell, Slichter, Daniels, well, you've spoken of Daniels.
Pound, by the way, I had in class.
Did you?
Yes. When he was a graduate student.
Do you have any particular opinions as to their effectiveness, or did they affect your career in any way?
I wouldn't say no. The deans had a job to do, and I think many of us were glad we didn't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Committee work was mainly within the department, and particularly in the years when LVM was graduate dean, because this meant, in effect, that the more work had to be done, administrative work, concerned the committees.
Yeah.
And in sometimes, I guess, LVM operated a little bit like General Eisenhower. People prepared, did the groundwork,
yeah,
and the choices were presented, and he made a choice if that's what was necessary. If the committee could come to a conclusion, fine, but if there were two possibilities or three, well, LVM would be confronted with them.
You know, there's a belief in campus that faculty governance is a very important and unique part of the university. Did you go to faculty meetings? Do you think faculty governance is a fact?
The trouble with faculty governance used to be that a few people did all the talking.
Mm-hmm.
There were some individuals who simply took it on themselves to comment on everything.
Paul Knappel was one of them. I know that.
Who's the man in geography?
Oh, Hartshorne.
Hartshorne.
Uh-huh.
And later, the man in mathematics.
Oh, yes.
But, and so the Senate system, I think, grew out of first the size of the university, which
mm-hmm.
made an all faculty meeting pretty wasteful.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to the faculty meetings?
Once in a while, when there was something up that I was interested in, but most of the time I did not.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went more often when there was, as part of a division where some divisional matter had to come up for faculty
mm-hmm.
consideration, and then the division members felt obligated to go.
Yeah.
I would say that most of my generation did not involve itself in all university affairs. But the representation was there in LVM particularly. And then later on, Burris as chairman was very effective.
That's right, he was on the university committee.
He was on the university committee for a long time. And then now the DeLuca era.
And what did you think of Harrington as a president?
I had very little contact with him. We liked the way he spoke after E.B. Fred's limitations. He really didn't influence our day-to-day operation anyway, we could see. Of course, toward the end of his term in office, when the whole campus was in an uproar, we were affected.
You were? Were you?
In the attitude of some of the students, and including some of our graduate students.
Were they active in the TAA at all?
But there were a few people who were inclined that way, yes. The general run of the average biochemist wasn't...
I wouldn't have thought so.
No. One of the things that surprised me down in Peru, when there were student strikes and so on, that very often the center of activity was the medical school.
Is that right?
Or the engineering college.
Just the opposite.
This was... Our people were so busy simply trying to keep their heads above water that they had no time for that sort of thing.
Mm.
I was, I was was in Peru from 66 to 69.
Oh, so you missed them.
And I came back a number of times. I was back in the summer of 68 to teach my graduate course during summer school. And at that time, there were people on the lower campus with strange costumes sitting around, more of the flower children. There wasn't anything violent about it. But when I came back in 69, there had already been a great deal of trouble. And my teaching assignments after I came back, I taught nurses for quite a while to a group. And there were a number in there who thought more of the, oh well, boycotting lettuce and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the general feeling that the faculty didn't know as much as the student activists. It was kind of a, after a lifetime of teaching very able and very well-motivated people, it hardly seemed worthwhile to waste your time on somebody who already knew all the answers, even those, if those answers are wrong. One of Homer Atkins's comments in his graduate course was that the trouble of his students who had learned organic chemistry, even at Wisconsin, was that they knew so many things that weren't so. And I think the activist era, this was before the activists, he didn't live to see the activists, but in retrospect, one of the strange things was that the students seemed to believe everything that their own leaders told them and were so completely skeptical on what others, what their professors said. We had a day of, what was it called? A day of concern when the university was closed. And everybody, this was after the, was it just before the bombing or after? I don't remember. It was shortly after I came back. And the meeting was held in the large seminar room to discuss war problems. And there was a young fellow talking about research simply has to be stopped because it is paid for and supported by the military industrial complex. And graduate students are merely used to further the ends of the military and of corporations. And I didn't know this fellow, and of course I'd been gone for 3 years, and I asked him whether he was a had any contact with science. And he said he was not a science major, but he had had a course in botany. And but he knew a good deal about the science problem.
Who was he, do you know?
I don't know the fellow's name. But this kid was telling a bunch of faculty people and graduate students that research had to be and should be stopped. And as far as I don't know what the situation is today, but just the point you raised at the beginning of this session on support from outside sources, we never were told what to do. That was in up to the professor. Now, it is true that if funds were available, for instance, Elvium had a large project on the composition of meat. The vitamin and protein value of different cuts of meat and different kinds of meats treated in certain ways. And this was a great deal of routine research. And but his people were supported to do this, and some of his best graduates grew up under this support. And they had time to work on other things as well. And their theses contained this work and also something else.
Were you saying this was supported by?
By the National Meat Foundation.
Yeah.
This would be an example. Because the money was available and students needed to be supported, money like this was accepted on a project which had value, there's no doubt about it.
Yes.
But which was not very challenging intellectually.
I see.
But the students didn't suffer intellectual deprivation because they were free to, and they did. And this is where this arrangement of a thesis with separate chapters that I referred to earlier comes into the picture.
Oh, I see. Is that one of the reasons that
system of theses that contained somewhat related parts meant that one could have a relatively routine chapter and then some other one which was more imaginative and which maybe didn't succeed.
That's a good arrangement.
So nobody suffered under that arrangement, really. But later on, when public opinion changes, something that is very normal can be made to look wicked.
Well, it may turn out to be a little bit more, a little bit different when big industry is involved.
I don't know.
This is probably a good time to close. We're getting to the end of this tape.
Okay.
So I thank you very much.
Well, I hope it.